Last year, the New York Times fated Australian writer Gerald Manane as the next Nobel laureate in literature. Alas, he didn't have a chance to win the prize because, as you know, the 2018 award was cancelled. But Manane did win the Prime Minister's Literary Award for his novel Border Districts, which he said at the time was his last novel. Now, one of his earlier books, first published over 40 years ago, is being reissued. It's called A Season on Earth, and it was Manane's second novel. But when it was first published, only half of this four-part book ever made it into bookstores. The book has now been restored to its original length, which means it's the first time readers have a chance to read it in full. Here is Gerald Manane talking to Sarah Lestrange.
Gerald, before we get to A Season on Earth, I did want to talk to you about the Nobel Prize because I did wonder just how many times you've been suggested as a Nobel laureate for literature front runner.
Well, it's not something that I like to think about, but I understand that one has to be nominated. And I would say that for 6 or 7 years, a lady in Sweden, an emeritus professor of literature, used to nominate me. She unfortunately has died, but I think someone in Australia has nominated me each year since. So probably for 10 years I've been named among the many, many candidates.
So it didn't come as a surprise to you when the New York Times said you were the next Nobel laureate?
No, that's been said before. And as I said, I keep it, try not to keep it prominently in my thoughts, but it's something that does give a bit of satisfaction. The satisfaction comes just from being considered an Australian candidate, never mind the vaguely possible honour that I might actually win it.
You did win the Prime Minister's Literary Award for Fiction for Border Districts in 2018. Was this a validation for you as someone known for not winning the Miles Franklin?
It certainly was. I look at it this way, that I call myself a marginal writer in the sense that, well, another way to put that is I'm not in the mainstream. And I've been a judge myself on panels judging major literary awards, and I understand how difficult it is for three people to agree on a single candidate. And I've always supposed that the many times when I've been shortlisted, one candidate has had a strong liking for my book and the other two haven't. And I've accepted that calmly, well, perhaps not calmly sometimes, but I've learned to accept it. And I think on this occasion, everything came together and the three were in agreement.
Well, let's talk about A Season on Earth. It was first published as A Lifetime on Clouds in two parts, rather than four, 40 years ago. How did it end up only that half was published?
Well, I had one book to my credit, Tamarisk Row, which was a shortlisted for the Age Book of the Year Award in 1974. The book Tamarisk Row was highly praised in some quarters. It was ignored and even reviewed harshly by a few people. But for all that, I was still only the author of one book. In my mid-30s, I wasn't a chicken. And along I went to my publishers, and the editor who had overseen the publication of Tamarisk Row had left. She was Hilary McPhee, who later was famous in founding her own publishing house. And so without Hilary, I felt a bit lost. And the new editor considered that the book I handed in as my second submission was far too long. He was correct in that. What I would have liked to do at the time, and it turns out now that I'm glad I didn't, but what I would have liked to do was to shorten the whole thing, take out 20 pages here and 10 pages there, and made the whole four sections into a publishable book. Instead of cutting it in half. But that's what was done, and I thought I rued it at the time. I put up with it, but now, many years later, everything's come out, worked out beautifully.
Your publisher at the time saw the first half of the book as a comic romp, but you saw this as a misreading.
I was troubled by that. It's not a comic romp. In fact, I was pleased that a certain reviewer, can't remember her name, she was a woman, she called it a sad book. And I was, as I said, pleased by that. There's humour in it, there's deliberate humour in it. And now that the four parts are published, I'm sure it looks anything but a comic romp.
Were you deflated by this experience at the time?
very much so, and other circumstances in my life made it hard for me at the time to keep on writing. I didn't accept their decision straight away. I spent a lot of time vainly doing my own shortening. I could have saved my time because they had made their minds up, and the book was cut literally in half. So the experience of running around in circles trying to cope with the publisher's demands slowed me down. A Lifetime in Clouds was published in 1976, and The Plains wasn't published until 1982. So that's 6 years. It was a long time without anything happening.
So, Gerald, why were you so determined to have this novel published in full 40 years later?
I wasn't. The determination came from a man called Michael Hayward, who's the director of text publishing. He came to my house in the remote western part of Victoria one day, and I was showing him through my literary archive, and I told him the circumstances of this book of four parts having been cut in two. And he, being a publisher and a great fan of mine, asked to see it. And I find it strange now, but at the time I said, "No, Michael, I don't think that book is worth publishing in my lifetime. Let it happen years later when the archives are available." And he accepted that. But a couple of years later, he asked me again, and I was in a different mood, and things were going well for me. I said, "Michael, you can take it and read it." And I was frankly surprised by his reaction, and I'm still pleasantly surprised by people's reactions so far to the book. A little bit of a self-doubter. I put so much effort into my writing, and I discard so many hundreds of pages that I don't really have the ability, and I don't really care, but I've never had the ability to stand back and look at my work objectively. So Michael's decision to publish was a great relief to me, a pleasant surprise, and what's happened since has just been icing on the cake.
So it feels good to have that out there and to be complete. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the book. So the book is about Adrian Sherd, and we meet him as a teenager at Catholic school in Melbourne. The book is divided into four parts. So in this first part, we meet him as the teenager. In the second part, it's really in his head, his marriage to Denise McNamara. The third part, he goes off to seminary. And then in the fourth part, he has attached himself to the ideals of poets. Would that be a correct breakdown of the four parts?
Well, the most accurate thing you said was it's all in his head. Everything's in his head. Well, not quite, but nearly everything. His obsession with sex in the early session is not with real sex, but imaginary sex.
So he goes off on these fantasies and has orgies with starlets, movie starlets, but nothing is actually happening on the ground. He has no prospects.
He's basically, his problem is isolation, and it's never explained why he's so isolated. And the same thing with Denise McNamara in the second section. They sat together in the same carriage in a railway train for over a year. Why didn't he talk to her? Well, he didn't.
He didn't need to. He had this full-blown relationship with her already in his head.
And just to...
I love that he'd gone through the stages of a relationship and then the stages of marriage all in his head, so he felt experienced in the world.
He thought that he'd lived a rich, full life. He'd experienced parenthood. So there's a lot in that book that's... it's not just a simple comic romp, as we were told before.
Well, no, it's far from it. And then the sections on the seminary, his discovery of poets, and I guess I have to ask the question, how much of it is autobiographical? Because you did grow up as a Catholic. You did go to seminary. You did then step away from it.
Here it comes. Of course I was waiting for it.
Of course.
I will call on my standard answer. My life was stranger than Adrian's. And I only drew flesh out the character of Adrian, I only drew on the not-so-strange aspects of my life. So obviously that's a tongue-in-cheek answer, and equally obviously you'll never get the true answer, but I've given you a hint.
We'll have to use our imagination. I was intrigued by his travels in his mind. I think that's the thing I found most fascinating about this novel, and the landscapes in his mind in particular, which is a theme that comes through your work, these landscapes that Adrian would travel to. Can you describe those landscapes that he would go to and what they meant to him?
That's a very perceptive remark. No one, to my knowledge, has ever made that comment before, and I really find that astonishing that you would have. It's almost a revelation to me. I know what you're saying is true, but I've never quite put it that way to myself. I think it goes back to the fact that, in some ways, I have difficulty thinking abstractedly. Abstract thought to me is barren, unattractive. I could never. One attempt I had at university, I managed to pass philosophy one. I found that sort of thinking utterly uncongenial. My thinking is visual to a huge extent, and I even conceive of the mind itself. I've quite often said in my writing that the mind is a place. And that it is a landscape. I know it isn't, but I mean, in an attempt to understand such an extraordinary thing as the mind, I rely on images of landscapes and places. And I hadn't realised how much Adrian indulged in that sort of thing. The landscapes of America, for the reader's benefit. When Adrian is in a mood to, as he used to put it, visit America, which is to say fantasize about sex with film stars, he had a model railway and he drew on the piece of timber that the model railway was attached to. He drew a crude map of the United States and he wound up his clockwork train, locomotive, and let it go around the loop of the circuit of the toy train, and where it stopped, it might have stopped in the Great Plains states, or it might have stopped in an Appalachian state or a far western state, and that was where he had his romantic adventure, sexual adventure with his film star. And that, to me, seems perfectly normal. I can understand someone doing that, but to someone else it might seem extraordinarily strange. But what it leads me to conclude, and I really hadn't thought of it this way before, is place was terribly important to him. He couldn't just think, I'll have sex with Jane Russell tonight. It had to be, I'll have sex with Jane Russell in Montana. Or
the place was the erotic
thing.
Don't ask me
to explain that anymore. It's just a marvel to be marvelled at.
Yeah. Marvel to be marvelled at. So in 2009, you moved to a small town in Western Victoria called Goroke, and you went there after the death of your wife. You lived there with your son. Drew you to this place, which seems to be a fulfilment of your fictional writing about landscape?
It makes no sense to anybody except me, but and my son, who chose Goroke for economic reasons, he wanted a house of a certain price range, and he bought the house in Goroke. And my interest in the place is partly explainable by the fact that it fulfills the geometry of my life, but that won't make sense to anybody much. Let's just say that the day I drove up there in 1997 to visit him for the first time, I had this utterly inexplicable feeling as I came over the low hill that leads into the town, saw the trees and the houses intermingled with them. I thought, I want to live in this place.
Gerald, when your novel Border Districts came out in 2018, it was said to be your last novel. Is that still the case?
Well, it's a little bit more complicated, but it is my last work of fiction. And, of course, A Season on Earth goes back to early years.
Yeah, that was 40 years ago.
It's all complicated, but when I did write it, I felt there was nothing more to write about. And I did say that about it, that it would be my last.
So does that mean you're not writing anymore?
I'm writing, I'm always writing, but at the moment it's all for my archives.
So if you're not writing for publication now, why do you write?
I write because it's the only relief I can find for this unbearable build-up of imagery and feeling, overflow of, it's not the only one actually. I play the fiddle now. I've played it for years on and off, and I've finally taken it up seriously again. And between playing the fiddle and playing golf and writing for the archives, I'm just about able to express all that I feel needs to be expressed.
Well, Gerald Manane, it's been wonderful having you tell me about your writing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gerald Manane speaking to Sarah Lestrange. A Season on Earth is published by Text.